September 7, 1985. Henry O. Coyote and Stuart Connor are at the site of a battleground which has archaeological site number 24BH266. Henry will tell us about the Crow and the Blackfeet battle that took place here.
Well, Stu, we were here at one time before, and I told you that I knew about this site as a boy. And we're facing northwest, and in plain sight is the spring, Muddy Springs, in plain sight. And the hills are over to slightly to our left. And according to the people that I heard them talk about, when we were camped at Muddy Springs one summer, they come up here to pick berries, and those people that I remember that being there was Good Horse, Horse's Mane, Takes the Gun, Jim Hill, and Tom LaForge. They gathered under the shade, under one of those box elder trees, and as a boy, we were playing around. We sat down and listened to the story, and they asked my grandfather what he knew about this site here. And it just so happened that the Crows were camped around that spring over there at that time. That's when they noticed this war party over here. And they came to the site here, and they kind of start barricading themselves here. And there's no way they could get near the group. They found out that there were Blackfeet. They say Piegare. Piegare, you know, I believe we don't know what that word means, but the Blackfeet call themselves Pikani. So I believe it's a mispronunciation of their own word, and they call it Piegare. And I checked into that word, but they got the name Blackfeet, you know, by the fact that they were surrounded by Crow warriors at one time. There was a war party, and they set fire to the grass upwind from where they were hiding, up there near Hart Butte. And instead of smoking them out while they went out the other way, when they come out, while their moccasins were stained by the burned grass, that's why they got the name Blackfeet. So while they were there, they start approaching this knoll here, this hill. You know, they couldn't get near it because the Blackfeet had the advantage, and they can see about a mile around here. They couldn't even get closer than a mile because they had the advantage here. So they didn't know what to do, so they were all on horseback, and they were up on that hill, on that ridge over there, you know, just west of us from here. They were up on that hill trying to figure out what to do. And this man came along, and he offered to lead the charge. And what he said was he was going to draw their fire and he would lead the charge, and by doing so, after they have expended their ammunition, he would, used up their arrows, while they could come in and rout the Blackfeet. So that man's name was what his name means, Ashyakash, means a young bull elk, a spike horn or something. So I guess he had a visitation somewhere, and the things he was supposed to do in battle by his advisors from the spirit world, he was to use more like a tomahawk, fashioned like a tomahawk, but using the horns of a elk. What happened was, he wore a blanket, had paintings on the back of a bull elk on the back. So he went through the ritual of going into battle, preparing for battle. And when he led the charge, when they came here, he led the charge, and they expended their ammunition on this man. And what he did was to go right into these barricades here, and he started hitting them with this elk horn tomahawk he had, and they routed the Blackfeet. And they counted 33 was in that war party, a Blackfeet war party. And what he, after the dust settled, well, they killed 31. And he said, says, don't wipe them out, says, save at least two to carry the story back to their people of what happened to this war party. So according to the story, these two were spared, and they took off across straight ahead here in the northwest direction from here. And that's how the Blackfeet knew what happened to this war party here. What happened was this war party came to against the Crows. They wanted to find the camp and probably get some horses. And according to the historians, you know, they were to steal horses, but according to the Indians, when they get something like that, horses or any weapon or anything that the enemy holds, you know, it's a war trophy, a battle trophy. So that's why they came this way, was to either encounter the Crows, or if not, well, take their horses, one way or the other. Either if they encounter the Crows, well, they wanted to come in contact with the Crows so they can strike coup or take something of their possessions. And that's why they came this way, but they never got the horses, and instead of that, they were spotted before they could do anything. And they were routed from here. And even though that the Blackfeet weren't here, they know the story just about the way I'm telling it now. And they didn't know the name of the man that routed the war party from here, but they found out later that what his name, who he was, what his name was, and all that. So that's about the size of the story that was told. Of course, when my grandfather was telling it, he was singing the songs, or battle songs or whatever at the time, but I wasn't too aware of those songs at that time. Either I didn't care too much for those songs, or whether I heard it, but I can't remember it. But that's the way the story goes, you know. Of course, little small details of what somebody else was wearing and what kind of horse he was riding and all that, but I don't have that anymore. I heard it, but I can't remember it. But that's the way the story was repeated at that time. I remember it when I heard it as a boy, and I still remember parts of it. So this Ying Bull Elk was his name, but his boy was one of the first ones to go to school down here at the Mission School. They changed his name to Bill Moore. And that was his dad. And some of the people, descendants are from that family. Some are still living in the valley here.
Henry, when did the battle take place, as best you can figure out?
Well, my grandfather was about 90 years old when he passed on. He must have been about 70 or something. No, must be about 75 when he told a story over there by that spring. And he remembered it as a young boy. He was with the main camp up towards Livingston, around that area at the time. And some of the people that broke away from the main camp and came this way, they're the ones that encountered the Blackfeet here. And he was a young man. It wasn't too long before when he heard about it, he was a young boy. And it wasn't too long before the battles rose, so he must have been in his teens when he heard the story, and they showed him who was where and all that, you know, at the time they went through here. So I was about 7 or 8 years old when I heard that, and I'm over 70 now, so you can take it from there. He must have been about 75 when he told me the story. So at least a little better than 100 years. Mm-hmm. When this happened.
Which grandfather was that?
Old Coyote, my father's dad, my father's father. He was also the son of Mountain Chief. You know, there's two Mountain Chiefs, one among the Blackfeet and one among the Crows. Mm-hmm. The one among the Crows is my great-grandfather. And
when was the first time you came out to this site?
I've been coming out here with my grandparents ever since I can remember. In the summertime, we come over here and they pick berries in that draw up there. And sometimes they go up towards Hoodoo. But they pick berries here in the summer and camp here. Just get away from it all for a while, you know. And while they're doing it, we usually enjoy coming up here because it gives us a chance to get out in the open, you know, and get away from these towns and pick berries and just enjoy yourself out here, you know. So as far as I can remember, first time I remember, children were had what they call infantile paralysis or something, you know, they picked up my sister and myself, and they brought us out here so we could be away from those people that were quarantined. You know, we spent the whole summer out. That's the first time I remember. I must have been about more like a dream to me then. But, so I must have been 3 or 4, somewhere around there, years old.
Do you remember whether there was ever any battle residue around here, weapons or bones or anything like that?
If there were, well, somebody must have picked them up, you know, by the time most of my people, you know, my parents, when they start coming around here, you know, there wasn't hardly anything here.
Now, you don't remember anything here yourself at all?
No, no. Just a sight in the story. You know, any other question? Of course, different people coming here, you know, they all have, some have different theories and all that, but that's a story I heard from my grandfather. So.
And who else have you heard the story from?
I heard it from my wife's grandfather, too. You know, he does it. He heard the story. He wasn't here, but he heard the story.
What was his name?
He does it. He does it.
Martin, he does it?
Martin, that was Martin's dad.
I see.
And Martin knew the story, you know, just about the same story repeated by Martin as my grandfather told it, you know.
Well, did you and Martin then get the story from the same source originally?
Martin got his source from his dad. I got it from my grandfather.
I see.
And we compared notes, and they were both similar, you know, mm-hmm. practically the same story.
Yeah. I was here at this site with Martin. He does it one time, and he told the story to us here, and I have a tape recording of it also.
I see. So it'd be pretty close to what the way I'm telling you
yeah.
now.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So anything else you may have, Stu? I kind of like to come out here every once in a while, and I want to thank you for bringing me out here. You know, it brings back memories, you know, when I was a boy, and I showed you some sites on the way over here. Some of these sites were known to our people, but they didn't advertise it, you know, let it be. The feeling that they have is let it be, you know. But,
well, I want to use both your account and Martin, he does its account, and put it together with a map and the photographs and make a little article to publish in an archaeology magazine about this site to help preserve the Crow story about this site so that the site will not be lost to the
yes,
knowledge of people.
I appreciate your concern, Stu. And you know the Indians don't like to play dog in the manger, but you know your people are very curious. You know, they come around, they want to know what's under a rock. You know, they turn rocks over, and they more or less disturb it. And the Indians don't go for that, you know. Let it be, you know, because there's a story behind it, and history, part of our history is right here. So that's why they're concerned about it, and I appreciate what you're doing now.
My recollection is, Henry, that nobody has ever put anything in writing about this site, have they?
No, not that I know of. The Indians themselves tell the story among themselves, but I've never seen any publication. Mm-hmm. But what they're afraid of is somebody might take it and distort it. You know, that's the reason they don't usually tell the public about it. So anything else, Mr.
Well,
Connor?
let's turn the tape recorders off for a minute. Let me see if I can't think of a few more questions.
Anything you want to do, Mr. Connor, I'm willing to go along with you today.
Okay, we'll turn them off for a couple minutes here. Talking about the battle while the tape recorder was turned off, and one of the things I was interested in particularly was the name of the person who led the charge here for the cause.
Well, I don't know what his original name was, but the name that was passed on to me was, he acquired that name after he went out and, you people call it a vision quest, but he went out fasting and he came back and told the people that they should change his name to Young Bull Elk, either Stomp Horn or Spike Horn or something like that. What it means that he's had the makings of a bull, but he's not quite a bull yet, but a young bull. Yeah, you know, that's what the name implies. And, you know, like we said that you were once a boy, but not quite a man, a young man, but probably a teenager, but, you know, at the time where you were the most reckless of your life at that time, you know, curious and all that. And that's what the name implies, that he was not quite a bull, but he had the strong heart of a bull. That's what the name implies. And also, you know, you asked about the name of the site here. We all usually refer to it as a seed site near Muddy Springs. And you people call it the Grapevine Dome. And what was your other question now?
Well, how many crows do you think participated?
According to my grandfather and other informants, you know, the war party, the Blackfeet war party that were here, were outnumbered about 2-1 or 3-1. They were outnumbered. That's the reason the Blackfeet didn't charge the camp, because they were outnumbered. And maybe they wanted to sneak into camp, but they were sighted before they had a chance to do that. You know, they were sighted, and then they began to hole up in here, and that's when the battle started. And according to my informants, none of the crows were hit or hurt at the time. You know, they were just routed, and they wiped them out, except for two that were spared to carry the story back to their people. And
the conduct of the battle.
When they charged, it was agreed they didn't know what to do. They were, you know, the location of the site here was such that, you know, you could see a mile around here. You can't get closer than a mile without being picked off. So when this man came along and offered to lead the charge, you know, the leaders of the Crow group agreed that he should lead the charge and that they would follow him in. And when he hit the area here and routed the Blackfeet War Party, he was the first one to hit the area, hit the site. So naturally, he was credited with a striking coup. So they had what they call a warrior's homecoming and victory dance and everything right near the spring there. And they even talk about the praises that they extended towards the man. And he was he had the makings of a leader. So he was respected as such. That's why they repeat the story, you know, to honor his name or something, you know. And, it carried off into his descendants, you know.
If my memory is correct, you mentioned something about his son's name also.
Oh, yes. You know, instead of assuming his father's name, he was one of the first few that started school at the, when the missionaries started their school down here, he was one of the first ones, and they changed his name to Bill Moore. So he used that name until he died. But his relatives, you know, like the descendants of Plain Owl and all those people are related to this man that I'm talking about. But since his name was Young Bull Elk and Bill Moore, you know, a lot of people don't tie them together.
Okay, you mentioned when we first started several names of Crows, and I just wanted to get it clear on the tape here that they were, well, I'll let you say it.
Oh, the time I remember at that time, who was present, they're the ones that requested that my grandfather, Old Coyote, they asked him what he knew about this site here, and he told the story to the people that were present at the time were Horses Main, Good Horse, Tom LaForge Sr., and Jim Hill was one of them too, and Takes the Gun. They gathered around one evening under a shade over there by the spring, and he told a story, and he even sang the songs that were used, you know, in preparing for the battle. And after it was over with, they had the warriors' homecoming and the victory dance. So he sang those songs too, but you know, it probably won't make sense to a non-Indian if we start singing those songs, you know.
Henry, you called these stone structures here that the Blackfeet used to protect themselves barricades, and I think it was Martin, he does it, someone else has called them trenches. Is there a Crow word that applies to
these? Yes, it says the Crows refer to Aminachtua. Aminachtua meaning they're getting behind some kind of a barricade or whatever you call it. Is still, when you see it, you can understand the purpose of these structures here. So whatever you interpret in your mind yourself, why, you know, the Crows have that name, Aminachtua, meaning barricade.
Okay, thanks very much, Henry.
You're quite welcome. When we start talking about these different sites and different stories, you know, usually someone comes up with additional information, but at present I'm not aware of any additional information to what I'm telling you.
Well, thanks a lot.
You're quite welcome, and I want to thank you for bringing me out here. You're bringing out good memories around here, Stu Connor. You're a good man.
Thank you, Hank.
Starting.
So. Get them both going. We've had lunch and taken a bunch of pictures in color and black and white, and there's a couple other things that came up while we were talking, Hank. One of them was dealing with how you think the word trenches might have got started, and the other one was a little cairn for young bull elk.
Well, to begin with, I know that Martin was closely associated with George Walks. George Walks was in the First World War, and he used to relate to some of the stories that he was telling, and refers to trenches. He said they did the fighting in trenches. And I believe Martin may have gotten the idea that these sites are referred to them as trenches. And the other, we understand that the people that knew about the incident here, they erected a cairn out here close by, right closely. I know Martin showed his boy, Joe, he does it, that cairn, but I never had the opportunity to check with him until he passed on. So I know it's right in the vicinity, but I don't know which one it is. So I understand that they erected the cairn as a marker to recognize the achievement of that one man that routed the war party here. So that's about the size of it.
Okay, well, thanks again, Hank.